Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 266 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I am good, and I'm really excited about this topic today. We are talking about moving, and what's funny is that this was going to be one of our things we shouldn't have freaked out about from last week, and then when we started talking about it, we realized, oh, well, there's too much to actually cover here as just part of one episode. We should do one whole episode about moving. And then the more we talked about it, the more we were like, nope, actually, we could do 2 episodes on moving because there is a lot to say, right? And I think this is something that like a lot of people go through with kids at some point in their parenting, you know, journey.
Yes, I agree. And actually, even from our offhand comment last week that we were going to tackle moving as part of a bigger episode, we got multiple emails from you all saying, please talk about moving. We're planning a big move. And I also think whether you're moving just across town or some people are maybe just making a school move for their kids, there's a lot that we're going to talk about that can kind of apply to other big life transitions. I think it works whether you're talking about a small move across town, some big future move, or even maybe a job change or some other life transitions that doesn't mean you pack up in boxes, but it goes through a lot of the same emotions, I think.
I agree. And even people who don't have a move on their horizon, I feel like it's a normal thing for people with young kids to kind of be thinking about what's next or what will happen in the next stage. So I feel like a move is always like in the air.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't actually happen, it's one of those things that could potentially happen to anyone at any time. So it really is something that is often on their minds.
Yeah.
So today, this is a two-parter. Today's episode, we're going to talk about sort of the leading up to a big move, the thinking, the dreaming, the planning, sometimes the fantasizing about a move that may never happen. That's been a big part of my life. And then next week, we'll dig into the nitty-gritty of doing it, whether you're actually moving across the country or into a different country. Neither of us have ever done that, but I think a lot would apply, or just across town like I've done many times.
Yeah, this is going to be really fun. Well, let's just start this off by acknowledging we have both moved a lot. You definitely have me beat, but I think I have moved probably more than a lot of people as well. So maybe just to kick it off today, we can do the super quick version of our big moves, both the ones we made growing up and then those we've made as adults with our own families too. So should I like buckle up for yours? I'm a little afraid.
Yeah, this is kind of crazy. I'll go through as quick as I can, but I was laughing when I was writing this all down. Because I had lost count of some of these. So I was born in northern Michigan, in a little town called Munising, which is on Lake Superior. I lived in 2 houses there. I actually got to go back into one of the houses last year because it's a gift shop now.
That
was really fun.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that's so
it's
cool.
Really cool. But then we moved to Sault Ste. Marie, also in the Upper Peninsula, when I was 4. And then we lived in 3 different houses there, which actually meant I went to 2 different kindergartens. And I have very clear memories of both kindergartens, which I think is interesting. Then moved downstate at about 12. I was in 8th grade and I lived in 3 different houses in one town, then moved across the state when I was 14, lived in the same house for 3 years. That's a good record. Then my family moved to Indiana right after I graduated high school. Then a year later, I went to college in Michigan. Then I moved to Nashville, which is where Jacob was born. Lived there for about, I don't know, close to a year, maybe a little more than a year. Then back to Michigan, but this was the Lansing area. My sister lived there when Jacob was about 5 months old. Lived there for 2 years. That's where Isaac was born. Then John got a job in Minneapolis. We all moved out to Minneapolis, lived there for, I don't know, maybe a year. Then we moved back to South Bend, which is in Indiana, which is where my parents lived. Then back to Minneapolis. Then Lansing again. We're then that area for about 8 years, but in Lansing proper, a couple different places, and then another little town just outside of Lansing. Then the big move to Chicago, which was a little over a year. And then to St. Joe, where I've lived for 12 years. This is by far and away the longest I've ever lived in one town. But we've lived in 5 different houses here. So it's still been a lot of moving. And I counted it all up once not too long ago. And it's like well over 20 houses, maybe like close to 30. It's been a lot.
Wow.
Yeah. And most of those did happen as an adult with kids in tow. So yeah. I've done that packing up the toys and the books many times.
So many times.
Yeah.
You could really host an entire podcast series about moving with small children.
Oh my gosh. I'd rather not.
I know. You'd have to relive it.
I know. Yeah. What about you?
Okay. Well, a more perhaps a shorter list, but still some. So I was born in Oregon and moved to California when I was halfway through kindergarten. So I also did kindergarten in two different places.
Do you remember your kindergartens?
So my Oregon kindergarten was actually just a continuation of my Montessori school. You know how Montessori can be like, you know, I was kindergarten age, but I was still, and I have really vague memories of that classroom, probably because it was, I was probably in it from 3, 4, 5, all in the same. And then I have very, very clear memories of the kindergarten I entered in Santa Barbara when we moved to exactly halfway through the year. So January, I started there. Between kindergarten and third grade, we actually lived in 4 different houses in 4 years, all within the same school district. So I was not moving schools, but I did move houses a whole bunch from between kinder and third grade. And then I stayed in the same house through high school, went to college, obviously across the country. So that was a college move. And I also studied abroad in college. So it was around there. And then Brian and I moved from Chicago to Arizona as kind of like a young engaged couple. It was the year we were engaged, but not yet married. In Arizona, we made 2 crosstown moves in the almost 10 years we were there. So we had an apartment and then 2 different houses in those almost 10 years. And then 6 years ago, most listeners of this podcast know, we moved from Arizona to Orange County. I had 3 little kids for that move, and that was like a move across state. By that time, I had an elementary schooler and a preschooler and a toddler. So it was definitely like, it felt like a more grown up move because I dealt with things like changing schools.
You had a lot of things.
Yeah, there were those things like schools and friends were starting to be part of our life in Arizona, even those kind of the early stages of that. So it definitely felt like the most grown up move that we've done. And that was 6 years ago. And now, we have made a big decision this summer, just the last few weeks, actually. We are making it's a very big decision move. It's only about a 2.5-hour away move. We're moving back to my hometown of Santa Barbara this summer, and it's really happening. So
I'm so excited about this.
This is crazy. I mean, I'll try to give just the brief background. This was not... We're going to talk later about aspirational moves like that we fantasize about in the future. This was like a maybe after our kids are out of school type of fantasy. I mean, my parents live here. It's the town where I grew up. It's my favorite place in the world. But our kids were so rooted in schools, and we were, you know, we loved Orange County, and we had a lot of great things going for us there. So this was never something we were really seriously considering, honestly, until COVID. And so I really had this one day where I just thought COVID has really changed everything about the way Brian does his work, the way my kids are at school. And I was feeling kind of bummed about the next, not just the current reality, but really the next year or more. And it just seemed like it presented an opportunity to do something a little bit crazy, something that we wouldn't have done if things were plugging along as normal, because it would have felt kind of disruptive. My kids are entering 7th, 5th and 2nd grades, which are legitimately middle of their school career grades, and they're involved with friends and activities. But we're living through these unprecedented times, as they keep being told that we're living through. And so it forced us to like kind of make a decision that we might not have otherwise made. And it was, when I say forced, that's the wrong word. It invited us to think about doing a big transition that we probably wouldn't have made otherwise. And then that brought up questions like, we're not going to ever regret having, you know, more time really close to family. If we do go into like shutdowns again in the next couple of years, we'll be 5 minutes from my parents and not 3 hours. We can do the front porch thing more easily, or, you know, the 6 feet distance thing. We're very excited about just the community here and some of the longer term school opportunities, like the middle and high school opportunities for our kids.
So I don't think you mentioned that you're recording from Santa Barbara now.
So when I say
that's
here,
where you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I haven't moved quite that fast. I am at my parents' house, and we come up here a lot in the summer anyway. So in some ways doesn't feel that different. So we kind of took the uncertainty of COVID, and we kind of turned it into another big uncertainty, which is, you know, school changes for our kids and like big changes for us. But we are very excited and just feel like we feel like we were able to make an opportunity out of something that was feeling like a lot of our life had been sort of stripped away there in a way that was, you know, not going to return to normal super soon.
I love everything about this. Well, first of all, I bet there's a lot of people in the same boat right now, because it's like, you don't want to make those big moves, or it's harder to make those big moves when everything is stable and normal and, you know, when things are just plugging along. But then when everything is uprooted, it's like, why not just pile on and uproot the other thing too? Because either way, like, nothing is normal.
Right.
So it's almost like just double down on not normal.
Yes.
And then later it'll be normal again, whatever the new normal actually looks like in 2 years. Otherwise, if this was a movie you were thinking about making anyway in 5 or 7 or 10 years, you'd have to do it all again. Like, exactly. You'd have to uproot your lives. And, you know, I think that, like, with the, how weird school is maybe going to be in the mm-hmm. fall, and how different life is right now, and people's business and work opportunities may change because of the area that they're in, I just think this is going to be a hot topic over the next year. Yeah. So I'm excited that you're doing this, and I get to live vicariously because I love Santa Barbara. The couple times I've been there, it's awesome. And so,
well, you'll get to come visit someday.
Yes.
Someday
when that's happening again. Yeah. Well, let's take a break. And then when we get back, we'll kind of go back and forth and, like, talk about, I don't know, the fantasies around moving, the aspirational parts about moving, how you actually pull it all together and make it happen and make the decision. I'm pretty excited about this conversation. So we'll be right back. We are welcoming back our sponsor of Books today. That's like books, but with a V, as in Violet. It's a streaming library of animated storybooks that you can pull up on any device. I love this, Sarah, because classroom story time and library story time have, like, gone completely away for now. And I'm just remembering how meaningful those read aloud experiences were for my kids when they were little.
Right? That's like a staple. Well, of course, mom or dad reading aloud at home is wonderful too. And this doesn't replace that. But it does introduce new books and new read aloud experiences in a format that, you know, doesn't require us to do it all as parents. Books is brand new and they're adding more titles all the time. It's so fun to see the familiar titles on there and the favorite authors, and then also some books that my kids have never read before. Each book takes about 5 or 10 minutes to kind of watch. And what your kids are watching is the illustrations come to life with really lovely animations, but not super crazy to where it's more like watching a TV show. And then also the words are highlighted as a voice narrates them. You can create your own collections, like almost like a playlist, which I did for Violet the other day. And I had her watch a few books next to me while I worked.
Oh, I love that. Well, Vux works on any of your devices. You can even put it on the big screen with your Apple TV or Roku and let multiple kids enjoy a story together. There are no ads, no in-app purchases, and guaranteed kid-friendly content. And right now, Vux is offering 1 free month subscription to all parents worldwide, no purchase necessary. To get your free 30-day trial subscription, go to Vux.com. Again, that's Vux, V-O-O-K-S.com, to get 30 days of free animated read-aloud stories. So Sarah, guess what went and happened in Michigan last week?
What?
It got legit hot. Like, it feels like a real summer now. And as you know, one of my favorite summer parenting tips is the liberal application of frozen treats.
That's a good one. Well, the weather doesn't change as dramatically here in California as it does where you live, but there's still something so special about frozen treats on a really warm summer day.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm totally arbitrary about when I'll give my kids treats in the summer. Like, you know, for years, my parenting strategy was to give them an ice cream bar and send them outside while I made dinner just so I could get it, like, all on the table with my sanity intact. But then there was always that trade-off that the treat might ruin their dinner. But with our sponsor Breyers Carb Smart Treats, I don't worry about that at all.
Seriously, that is one of my favorite things about Breyers Carb Smart. The treats have no more than 150 calories per serving, and some flavors have only 60. They're a great size for when you want to have a little sweet treat but don't want to feel too full. And they're lower in carbs and sugar, so you won't experience that energy crash afterward either. And they're so good.
They are. My whole family is in love with the chocolate bars, and I'm making sure to keep the freezer stocked with them for those moments where they want a treat and I want a break. Breyers Carb Smart Treats are available at all major retailers, Walmart, Target, Kroger, Amazon Fresh, etc. So look for them when you're filling up the cart, either virtually or in person this week. You can also go to Breyers.com/themomhour to get a coupon to try it out. Again, it's Breyers.com/themomhour for a coupon to try Breyers Carb Smart.
Okay, we're back, and we're going to kind of start with move fantasies, because I think everybody can relate to this, even if you don't have an imminent move like the one I'm in the middle of. So, Megan, I'm curious how common it is and has been for you to fantasize about moving, because I have a theory that some people do this more than others. And I know just from friends that some people really lean into moving fantasies and others maybe less.
I mean, I am a fantasizer. Yeah. I am a dreamer, right? That's what I do. And I used to be like an obsessive moving fantasizer all the time. for the first 10 years of after having kids, John's job really kept us moving anyway. So like moves were always on the list of possible things that could happen. And often what would happen is he'd have a couple opportunities like that he could go, and it'd be like this city or that city. And then I'd get excited about mm-hmm. one of the locations, and then we would just go for it. So several of our moves were kind of built around that. And there was something about that adventure that was, I really loved when the kids were little. Like it felt very much like we all pulled together. When everyone's small and you're not really doing much anyway, except all as a unit, it felt like we were just this team, and yep. we were all like moving as a team, and that worked. I will say, so we've lived in this current town that we're in now for the last 12 years. For the first, you know, 5-7 years, I definitely still had like the idea that we'd move again on my mind. Like I didn't feel like this would be our last stop with the kids. I thought there'd be at least one more big move, maybe to Grand Rapids, which is like an hour and a half away. I thought about that for a while. Maybe we'd make a bigger move. I'll talk about that one a little bit later, like a really huge, like year-long trip or something. But it has become less frequent for me over the past 5 years because we got settled here. And then as the kids got older, the benefits of that novelty started to feel kind of outweighed by the hassles and downsides because we just got rooted. And then over the past 4 years, we've been divorced or divorcing and then divorced. So that adds like a huge level of complication. It's not even just complicated to move out of the city. It might not even be possible. Mm-hmm. So it's become kind of like backburnered. And I think for me now, what I think about is, I know this isn't my forever town. I'm not going to retire here. Like that's not what's going to happen for me. But like now the kids are all going to be out of the house like in 7 to 8 years. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of just keep letting this like fantasy of moving simmer in the background without actually having to worry about it mm-hmm. right now. Especially because, you know, parenting time and custody issues aside, I think I now, it's one thing to all move together as a unit, but when the other parent and you don't live together, it stops feeling fun to me. Yeah. I want the stability more than I want the adventure yeah. right now. Yeah. So I'm now kind of scratching that adventure itch thinking, what will I do when my kids are older? And I'm not even going to be 50 years old when they're all out of the house yeah. or, you know, on their way out of the house. So then I can do literally whatever I want.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that has definitely kind of tamped down my need to feel like I need to do anything immediately.
Yeah.
I'm not obsessing about it, but I definitely play out different possibilities in my mind.
And I feel like 7 to 8 years away is actually short enough that you could meaningfully fantasize. If it were 15 years away, it just feels like, gosh, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. But, you know, with a 7 to 8 year timeline, in 3 or 4 years, you could start making plans. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So,
well, there's already things I could start doing. Like I can research places and like cost of living and mm-hmm. all. There's lots of little tiny things I'm kind of already doing to get me there,
yeah.
you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not surprisingly, you call yourself a dreamer and a fantasizer. I am not a very good one. And I, you know, this is yeah. just my personality. It's hard for, and not just about moving, a lot of long-term visioning is hard for me. It's hard for me to mentally kind of create a hypothetical. And I think for a couple reasons. One, then I get impatient and it feels disappointing or like a takeaway if that thing cannot become real. So I think that's one reason, is it's like a little bit of like an emotional protection zone that if I can't have it, then why would I dream it? That's one. And then the other right. is, you know, I'm really good at actually like making something real with details and planning once it is a possibility. So
right.
dreaming and fantasizing, it's hard for me to separate that by then thinking of all the things that would actually need to happen to make that occur in real life. Like the yes. two aren't separate in my mind. But that said, it's not impossible. So a couple of things that I've always had fun dreaming about. I love setting up a new space or a new house or even a new room from scratch. And so that has always been a fantasy. And that's especially when your house is cluttered or you just want like a reset. When other people move, I find myself thinking, oh, wouldn't that be fun to just have like a totally blank mm-hmm. slate? So, you know, I've fantasized about that, or I've fantasized about like a neighborhood. If I drive through a neighborhood and it's just really pretty and has a lot of charm and character. So, you know, I'm not without that ability, but it's definitely, I'm not as prone to it as you are. I would say when I have had moving aspirations, they've either been something that's actually very doable, like maybe moving across town to a different neighborhood, or having a home that with a bigger yard, or something that's like, you know, a little on the doable side, or it's right. very, very future. Because then I can think, you know, 20 years from now, or when we're retired, wouldn't it be fun to, you know, have a little apartment in a big city or something like that. It feels so removed that I don't have to bother with the details. So, yeah.
Right. Yes. Of, it's more like you're just, it's like a movie.
Yeah. It's like someone else's movie starring. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, the something like the feeling of setting up a new space and fantasizing about that, that's like taking something that's almost too big to wrap your arms around and then putting like creating a little doable detail.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, it all builds on that, because basically when you move, it's like that times 100.
But each thing
happens independently mm-hmm. too, to some degree. Like you set up one room and then you set up the next. Yeah. It's like you line up the dominoes and you knock them down.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that all makes sense. I like to think about future, you know, pretend Sarah living in a little apartment in the city too.
Yes, yes. Well, and it could happen. Have you ever had a big aspirational move that now that ship has sailed, or that didn't happen, or maybe talk through a time when you thought you wanted something and then it didn't happen for whatever reason? Cause I think that's important.
Yeah. I've had so many, like I've had too many to count. I can't even remember them all. I know that in my early days of child rearing, I had some like, you know, off the grid fantasies. That was probably my biggest aspiration, like that just never went anywhere. I wanted to move the whole family to South America for a year. I didn't expect to like live there long term. This was about 7 or 8 years ago. And I did a lot of research, like a ton of research. We had timelines, everything. Like I had sent emails to the school to find out what I'd have to do about taking the kids out for a year. And it didn't happen for a variety of reasons. I'm still a little sad about it. Although now when I look back, it's like, I can't even imagine a life in which that trip had happened or that experience had happened. Mm-hmm. Much like I can't imagine a life in which like I would have lived off the grid with 5 little kids. Like I just can't imagine it now. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's how anything that doesn't happen is, right?
Yeah.
When you look back in hindsight and go, man, the way it really did go versus the way I kind of fantasized about happening, it's just, they do not go together.
Mm-hmm.
When I was younger, I always wanted to live like in a hip urban neighborhood in a big city, probably New York City. Or Chicago or someplace like that. And now I don't really ever see myself wanting that quite the same way again. Although I do love to visit the city, I don't have the same pull to move mm-hmm. back like I used to move there like I used to. We did live in the city of Chicago, but it was a very residential neighborhood, very quiet. And then we actually did live in a really hip urban neighborhood in Minneapolis, which I absolutely loved. But then like, if you don't have the budget to take advantage of city yeah. living, and at the time I had 2 like really tiny kids, it just was not quite what I had fantasized about. So I couldn't even list them. I probably have 10 other places that I've gone into serious like research mode about. Because for so long that thinking about the next place was just like the way I was wired. Like
yeah.
it was just constant background chatter in my mind. I did not anticipate staying in a small town like St. Joe as long as I have. But now that I'm here, the longer I'm here, the more that background chatter has quieted.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's interesting. The one that comes up for me of something that I aspired to and never realized is really going all the way back to when I was a teenager. I just fantasized hard about living in really specifically Boston or New York, but like you said, big city, urban life. And I just was very fixated on kind of the romance of an older, established East Coast city and how like studious I'd be and writerly I'd be if I lived there, went to college there. And, you know, I ended up outside Chicago and loved it. But high school Sarah like had a very specific fantasy in mind that never really got realized. And that's not to take anything away from the city of Chicago where I did live. And I did have like a city life for a period of time. But it was such a well-formed fantasy when I was about 17 about not just a college experience, but a young adult experience in
yes.
Boston or New York that ship has for sure sailed. I mean, I still, if I watch movies or shows with some kind of brownstone situation
yes.
going on, it still fires up those neurons. And maybe there's a maybe there's a brownstone in my long, you know, long future planning, but that, it's most likely that that ship has sailed. I'm certainly not going to be 22 in Boston ever again, right? You know, so
I blame friends.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah.
I think a lot of us had that very unrealistic fantasy
totally.
Because what young, you know, 20 somethings and like maybe they went into their 30s could afford to live the way they did in Manhattan. It was like ridiculous, but we were raised on that stuff. Not just friends, but like
Sex
that whole
city.
New York City living thing was prevalent in the 80s and 90s for sure.
And even going back to the books I read, I think we've talked about this on other episodes, the books we read as kids are, you know, about the Judy Blume books that kids living in apartment buildings and like it was
Did you ever read Harriet the Spy? That
you
was
know,
another one.
I have read that one. And I mean, everything took place in New York and I wanted some of that. Okay, well, let's talk about right now. I'm going to ask you, because I'm in the middle of a move, but what moves, like
you can't
right
think
now,
about another one.
What's your fantasy right now? Or what is that aspirational move for you right now?
So the funny thing is, I think I kind of burned myself out on the big city fantasies. I still have to visit, but I don't really want to move in a big city. I have gone like completely in the other direction, which is like middle of the woods with nobody around. And I don't know what I'll actually wind up doing when the kids are gone. I have a feeling it will likely be a mix. Like I'll probably have a place in a, you know, in a small city or a small, like a medium sized city maybe. And then probably we'll have some property. And then I probably will go to the big city a couple times a year for people watching and go see shows and stuff like that. But I used to really love being surrounded by all that noise and activity. And now when I go into like Chicago, I find that I like it for short doses, but it overwhelms me. Like I just am done pretty fast. And I have really leaned more towards quiet and just being surrounded by trees. And I can just see myself like heading down that path.
Yeah.
And I also have definitely felt a big call to go back to Northern Michigan where I was raised. And every time I go up there into the UP, into the Upper Peninsula, I'm like, yeah, this feels like right to me. Mm-hmm. So I look at property up there and fantasize about it. I'm just not sure yet whether that would be a real move or just a place to have like a vacation spot for my family. Like, I don't know, but I could start moving toward, even in the next few years, I could start moving towards setting myself up for that. So that's kind of a fun thing. It's kind of like a fun, like, stop on the way to somewhere.
Like something relatively attainable.
Right.
Let's dig into this a little bit because I am also moving to the place where I was raised. Do you think there's something about being in our 40s and what is it about the pull of, because not everybody's hometown is gorgeous. Not everybody was raised like in a place they want to move back to. There's certainly things that aren't ideal probably about both of the places that you and I were raised. But what is it about the pull home? And do you think that's a common experience?
What I find is interesting is I can tell that people who have kind of stayed in the same region where they grew up and didn't leave and then come back, you know what I mean? It's like it becomes a little more, I don't want to say they're bored of it. I just don't think that they recognize it the same way you do when you leave and come back. And it's just, to me, I do think there's something cellular about it. Like
when I think so too.
Get like a few miles or a few hours north and the trees start to change and it just starts to have this Northern Michigan feeling, like I feel like it's like tugging me.
Yes.
Like keep going north. And I don't know if it's just things that I don't even remember that I remember from being a little kid, that the way the air smells and the way it feels, like it's different. It feels very familiar. And I don't know that you could recognize how familiar it feels unless you leave for a while and come back.
I agree.
It doesn't, like if I'd just been immersed in it the whole time, it would just be normal.
I agree.
And yeah, so I don't know. I think it probably is a pretty, it's just this feeling of like, this is who I am. And this is what I was supposed to be. So
I totally agree. And I will say that not only did I leave for a long time, but also my parents left for a period of about 8 years where they didn't live in the town that I grew up in. So there was no one actually, there wasn't like home to go home to.
Right.
And that was a very unsettling feeling. And I was an adult. I was a married adult, young married, and then, you know, with small kids. And they lived in that for a lot of that time. They actually lived in Scottsdale where we lived. So I had my parents in the same town, but my parents were not in the place I'd grown up. So I had no reason or ability to go home. And that was weird and unsettling. And you don't have family up there necessarily anymore. So it's not the pull of, it's not always the pull of family.
No.
It's the pull of the place.
I didn't have, I have no close family. I mean, I have some cousins and like an uncle up there that I rarely see, but like I did not visit. I did not go back to the upper peninsula of Michigan for probably close to 10 years after I left. Maybe once, maybe I went once to visit, but like, it was not a thing. It's really just been in the last 5 to 7 that we've really started going up there a lot. And so, yeah, I had a long break from it, and it's not a pull. It's a place.
Yeah. It's
the
a pull
is a place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting.
So yeah, I know it is. I'm curious what listeners think if they have experienced it the same way. So you're actually doing one of your aspirational moves. Like, so that's why you can't aspire to another one right now. But does this feel like a forever thing, like the town or the house, or how does that feel to you?
Yeah. I mean, it's still very new. All of this has transpired in the last, within a month, but really seriously within like the last 3 weeks.
And yeah, you guys really pulled it together.
We did. We did. Apparently, yeah. I don't like fantasize for a very long time. I just like fantasize real quick and then decide to do something crazy. It does feel more forever than any of our other moves. I still feel open to, it's just hard to know what the second, you know, half of my life or more is going to look like. But I feel that sense of place, that cellular homeness that you just described. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I have felt that. And in the last 6 years that we've been in Orange County, we've been a 2.5 to 3 hour drive away from this place. So I have been able to like feel like it was a home away from home, which was both wonderful, but then also just made me realize I wasn't quite home yet. Like I was close, but not all the way there. I love my house in Orange County, which as of this recording is still my house. It is not sold yet. And I really love that house. I love it probably more than any other house that I've lived in. But when people would ask, like, is this your forever house? Like, are your kids going to, you know, go to all through high school in this neighborhood and in this house? And I would always kind of pause and like, that was hard for me to picture. And maybe just because I'm bad at fantasizing, but I just couldn't, I didn't know. And now obviously I know they're not going to go through high school in that house, and that house was one step for us, but not the forever. This move does feel like it could be forever. As of this recording, everyone, please cross your real estate fingers. We are in the early escrow period on a house here. I just still feel like there are things that could change, but is that house that is hopefully ours, is that the forever house? I feel more like it could be than any other house I've lived in, but I still think it's wide open for, you know, for possibility. And I'll also say I've seen my parents who are in their mid 60s and early 70s between the two of them. I've seen them make several big moves and big decisions in the last few years of their careers and then into retirement that they would have said those were surprising decisions and moves. They ended up moving back here to Santa Barbara. They thought they had a different plan. So I've also seen that there can be big moves and big changes in that stage of your life too. So I'm not going to say forever, but it feels really good. I'll say that.
Well, and forever, I mean, can be interpreted a lot of ways. Yeah. I don't know. Like forever through getting your kids through school is one kind of forever.
Yes.
It's like there. Yeah. And then there's like the next stage. And I mean, I find it hard. People are so mobile. And people live a long time now. And it's like at the age of 42, I would find it difficult to imagine any place my truly forever home.
Sure.
Like
Yeah.
But the place itself, maybe.
Yeah. No, and it feels right in that way that you were describing. And so, yeah, so that's really exciting. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're kind of going to move from the truly aspirational and true fantasy to like, okay, now there's a move sort of on the horizon, but how do you make all the other decisions? Because moving someplace is like the first decision that I can tell you open up a ginormous box of other hypothetical situations. So that's what we're going to get into after the break.
Sarah, we finally got our pool open and the weather is warming up. So I have been slipping out there in the middle of the day to dunk my legs and watch the kids splash around. And sometimes I even get in and just float around in a tube with a beverage in my hand.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so good right now. I can't believe you have a pool.
I know. And I know what I'll be doing when we're done recording. So I really like to have, you know, a refreshing beverage, particularly an adult beverage in my hand when I'm doing that pool floating. I mean, I even bought floating plastic wine glasses the other day. I am really taking this pool lifestyle thing seriously. But the thing about having a beer or like a glass of bubbly in the middle of the afternoon is that then I just want to take a nap afterward, you know?
Oh, yes. I totally know that unproductive post-beverage feeling for sure.
Well, I'm really excited to have a selection of non-alcoholic craft beverages in my fridge. Compliments of our sponsor, Groovy. That's G-R-U-V-I. They make a Prosecco that tastes great on its own, or my favorite, blended into a non-alcoholic wine cocktail. But they also have a line of non-alcoholic craft beers, and I think those are my new favorites, actually. They're refreshing and taste like a beer you'd order at the brewery, but there is zero alcohol in them, so I don't get the urge to like take that long afternoon nap after I have a couple.
There are lots of reasons you might want to avoid alcohol or just drink less of it, and we think you should give Groovy a try. They've got a great deal for our listeners. Just use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order. Go to getgroovy.com. Again, it's spelled G-R-U-V-I, and use the code MOMHOUR for 15% off your order.
We are welcoming back our longtime partner, Shoot Along, today. Sarah, our listeners love this program.
Yes, they do. Shoot Along is an online photography course for moms who want to use their DSLR camera to take beautiful photos of their kids. I got my first DSLR back in 2012, and it was so intimidating learning to take photos in manual mode, but once I did, it was incredibly rewarding. We all love our smartphone photos, but there's really nothing like having that control over your settings to be able to take great photos in any light or situation.
Right now, Shoot Along is offering two different online courses that you do completely on your own time, at your own pace, no deadlines. Camera Express gives you 10 nuts and bolts lessons to get you comfortable with your DSLR camera and to start moving away from that auto setting, which I know is so tempting for all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And then Editing Express consists of 52 how-to videos showing how to edit and improve your images using Photoshop Elements.
Okay, so if I were you all, I would get both of those courses together. You can get them both for a total of $39.99. Because for me, in my photography learning, taking great pictures and knowing how to edit are so intertwined. They really work together. So I love that you can get those two courses as a bundle. And that's a really good deal. And what a fun way to challenge yourself this summer.
Yeah. So head to shootalong.com/themomhour to get Camera Express and Editing Express bundled together for just $39.99. Again, that's shootalong.com/themomhour and scroll down to choose Full Express to get that great deal. Check it out. Okay, Sarah, so I have some questions that I'm wanting you to tackle first because you are right in the middle of this process. And, you know, a 2.5 hour move is a big deal because, like, everything has to kind of, you know, we'll get into this more in part two, but like all of the details kind of have to come together all at once.
Yes.
In a way, like they're separate, but they're like en masse. So I know that you're doing a lot of thinking about that right now. So let's talk about some of the big questions that come up when you're planning a move. Like, so maybe you're at the point when you're shifting the, we had a funny conversation like a week ago or something. And because I was starting to get excited about Santa Barbara. And then I was like, so am I allowed to be excited about this yet? Yeah. Is this like a real thing? And I think you literally had decided like that day. You're like, oh no, it's happening for sure.
Yeah.
So like, how do you get, like, how does that work when you go from this would be cool to we're doing this? How do you make that transition? And then what happens?
Well, and there's been so much this whole time I've been describing my brain as like one of those scenes from a movie where someone, like Good Will Hunting or The Beautiful Mind, where someone has all of the calculus equations on a chalkboard and like they just stand back and they look at it and then they walk up to it and they change one little thing and then they stand back and they look at it again. But it's all interrelated. And I don't even really understand calculus, but that's what it has felt like, which is to say, we've done a lot of stepping back and saying, okay, what if it all looks like this? And then we'll step forward and we'll like kind of go down a rabbit hole of one detail. And then we'll step back and we'll realize that detail kind of changes the rest. So, you know, backing up, we decided relatively quickly that we thought we could do this. The first conversation was around Brian's job. And that was relatively short because there is an office up here. He does have remote working flexibility right now during COVID. And there is a long-term opportunity for him up here. And for that, we are so fortunate. And I can just say that I know that there's many, you know, many job situations where you can't just decide to move somewhere and your job is waiting for you. There's a few reasons why it worked out that way. But that was number one, was obviously like, can we be employed? But once we knew that and we felt that the rest of the logistics and finances could work out, it became this web of school. I mean, my children are entering second, fifth, and fifth is so tricky because in Orange County, fifth would be the end of elementary school. In most parts of Santa Barbara, they do still go through sixth. And then 7th and 8th is junior high and then high school. But in either way, 5th is either going to be the last or the second to last year of elementary school, which means you look at another school change within 2 years or less. So that's really tricky for poor Reed.
Yeah.
And then 7th grade for Allegra, which the good news is 7th grade is a year of change for a lot of kids in this area because they might be changing schools to go to like a junior high. But it's still only 2 years away from high school. So for my older two kids, it's not just like, where will they be in the fall, but kind of needing a line of sight. Okay, so then, so school is a big, big question. And then location of housing. And I think most people who've moved can relate to this. It's not unique to California or Santa Barbara. In almost every area you look in, there's some kind of trade-off or risk-reward benefit between. If you go to this area, your dollar goes a lot farther. You might get a bigger home, but maybe the schools aren't as good, or maybe you're farther from the part of town. Maybe your commute is longer. There's so often some kind of like, okay, we could have the perfect house, but it wouldn't be in the best location, or we could have the perfect location and it wouldn't be the best house, or introduce four other variables. And there's like this puzzle, right? So we did a lot of that house and school and area, neighborhood, school district, like, I don't know, just talking about it and just kind of weighing. And so it is not easy. And then, you know, there are things like the timing. Obviously, we're pulling this trigger in the summer in preparation for a fall that we don't even know what the fall school situation will look like. But sometimes that, you know, I've moved in January before at the start of a calendar year. Sometimes timing of the move is one of those situations. Some families are faced with like, and you've probably done this, I'm sure, Megan, where one spouse goes ahead and works, you know, or you do some kind of long distance thing. We're not faced with that right now, mostly because of COVID and everything's right. remote anyway. So that's kind of where we went. And I guess I know in a little bit we're going to get into like how those decisions get made. But I'm just acknowledging that what it feels like is one decision we made, which is to move our family to Santa Barbara, which then launches that calculus whiteboard or chalkboard. And it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And I know we'll get into this like idea, though, that there really isn't such a thing as the perfect lineup.
Right.
I know we're going to dig into that in a little bit, but I think it's tempting to think like if all of the pieces fall into place perfectly, then like, you know, that there's a way to make that happen.
And, yeah.
I think it's interesting for the first half of my adult life, almost all of our moves were dictated by following a job or an opportunity in another city. And typically the cities were far away.
Mm-hmm.
And typically we did not have an opportunity to go visit and like hang out in that city before we decided to move. So like, and we were moving far distances with little kids.
Yeah.
So there were a couple times we would stay with family. I remember that doing that a couple times, like move someplace, stay with family while we figure it out. But like there's still, things had to get decided pretty quick.
Yep.
And some decisions had to be made before we left.
Mm-hmm.
Like schools, like we had to kind of at least get the kids enrolled somewhere or know something that was going to happen. So a lot of the decisions were made on the fly. And the criteria that we followed were often location-based,
mm-hmm.
And like cost of living-based. And so it just didn't allow us to do much, to have a lot of that strategic calculus going on.
Yeah.
It was like we had to make everything line up behind one decision.
Yeah.
And then since living here in St. Joe, with the moves being in town, they've become slow and strategic and like leisurely. Like usually it's been like, okay, so one of the things that's interesting about having five kids is that your housing needs change dramatically pretty often. So when there's five little kids, you can live in a pretty small space and they all hang, as long as there's like a toy room and they're all sharing rooms and they don't care. That's one thing. Then they get big and like, that little cute Cape Cod that seemed to work so well when they were, you know, little. Now there's like these lanky legs, like blocking up the doorways. And, you know, the bedrooms, like the kids whack their heads on those ceilings when they're upstairs and they don't want to share a room anymore. So then it's like we've made a lot of moves here that have been simply because the house just wasn't working for us anymore. And for a variety of reasons. And now it's kind of going in the other direction where kids are growing up and moving out. And like, there's other ones that are on the horizon to move out. In 2 years, I'll be down another kid or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now I've got two adult kids kind of coming back and forth. I don't anticipate that to be the case in 2 years. And then William is very much college bound. So in 2 years, I could have two kids in my house rather than five.
Yeah.
It makes huge differences.
Yeah.
And even like, what you're thinking about or looking at. So I don't know. I just think the way that we've done it now, the questions that come up now are very different than the questions that came up when the kids were, you know, 2, 4 and like 6 and 8 or however far apart they are in age. It's just, they're different and you almost have to just pick the one or two things that make the most difference and then build the rest around that.
Yeah.
So then let's talk about that. How do those decisions get made? How do you know what to prioritize? And then let's talk about that decision paralysis. Mm-hmm. This idea that there's one perfect way to do it. And like, how are you dealing with that right now?
Well, yeah. And as you were talking about moves getting more strategic, it was occurring to me, even though you're in my situations have been different, we're both now in our 40s and we've both seen through our own moves that like, that no one thing is perfect. So even mm-hmm. though I'm making it sound like, well, we've been so stressed out and there's all these decisions, I do think I have a calmer sensibility about it all than I would have if I was 27 and had 2 little babies. Because I think if you haven't, moved at all, it can feel like every decision is forever. So
right.
part of it is learning through doing it. And so I think both you and I can speak from that place of we know it's probably going to be okay. But yeah, I think the order of operations is what's felt really challenging with this move. Like if we find a house in this particular location, great, we're close to my parents maybe, or we love the home maybe, but then that automatically like kind of makes these schooling decisions more difficult, for example. And then we've done that. We went back and forth so many times on different scenarios. I think what has helped me this time about actually making decisions is a couple of things. One is just being able to talk and dialogue with Brian and also with my parents about this kind of complicated interconnectedness and the pros and cons of each decision. I'm normally more of like a solo processor. Like I'll go for a walk, I'll think about it, and then I'll come to Brian and be like, okay, I figured it all out, which I'm sure is frustrating to be married to someone like me because I don't always process out loud with other people. And I kind of have like a stubbornness about like figuring things out on my own. But at this magnitude of decision making, I really benefit. And of course, it's not about me, it's about my whole family. So it's been great to dialogue about it and just be able to talk. We've had to kind of do that not around the kids. And that's hard because we're still staying at home with our family most of the time. But I've wanted to protect them from, they don't need all the pros and cons. They don't need to get excited about one scenario right. only to find out that that's not actually possible. So we've had to be careful about that. So talking about it and dialoguing and hearing other people's opinions, not everybody's, like not throwing it out on social media, but within my trusted circle, having other humans to kind of talk about it with has been helpful. And then, you know, it's validating to have one of those people say like, wow, yeah, I see that. Like that is tricky. And then another thing that's been really helpful is just whichever one thing clicks into place first, even if it does that in a way that's maybe not my first choice or not totally within my control. Once one thing, and we're in this phase right now, like one thing clicks into place and it really does, it helps reduce the number of other variables. Even if the first thing to click into place is, you know, not your favorite or not your first choice, but at least it's decided. So we're moving to this place where at least we know one thing, which makes the decision tree starts to like prune itself. Does that make sense? Like there's things that fall away because they just don't make sense anymore. If we're going to attend this school, then this doesn't make sense anymore and et cetera, et cetera. So part of it has been patience, like just knowing that this will work itself out. A lot of trust that like nothing is irreversible. And that's something we've talked on this show about, right? Like big decisions are big and they're scary and they carry with them repercussions for sure. But even the biggest decisions are possible to change course or to, you know, to completely, there's a lot that you can back out of, even if you think you can't, right? You can pull a kid from a school that isn't working 2 weeks into the school year. Do we want to do that? No, of course we don't. But people do it all the time. And I think what I would offer our listeners, and we've said this about other parenting decisions, is like really reminding yourself that the stakes are probably lower than you think. I mean, we tend to make these things into really like top of the mountain important decisions. And even when they are, there might be more flexibility than you think. If it doesn't work out, you change course. So I don't even know where I went with that, but
well, it's helpful. And I think that what you know, it seems what you did quickly, even though in your mind it felt like all these nebulous. And the way I always think of it, you described the calculus on the board and like beautiful mind. But the way I think of it is like there's all these things floating above my head and I'm just grabbing and like trying to grab one and pull it down. Like it doesn't make any sense. But if I can just grab one thing and pull it down, then some of the things just go away. They're not relevant anymore. And that makes the floating circle is tighter and tighter. And so like, this is a great example. If for you, it probably feels like forever that you've been like in this soup, like navigating this soup of uncertainty, but you guys made a decision pretty quickly.
Yeah, no,
like,
it really that hasn't one decision been very long. Yeah.
That will now inform every other decision you make. And sometimes just deciding something is like, you have to decide something to get the ball moving. Yep. Right. Yeah. And I think that like, just all the things you just described, it really gets at the heart of why the moves I've, you know, embarked on since moving into St. Joe have really been so unambitious. We had been living in Chicago with four little kids. I loved it there. We had this, you know, beautiful early 20th century three flat. We had two floors of it. It was like, I felt like it was our first really grown up home. Mm-hmm. It felt very city, so much character, nice neighborhood, good friends. We could take advantage of cool city stuff, but the school decisions were so hard there. Mm-hmm. It was getting really complicated. It was unlike anything I'd ever dealt with. So like, and you know, big cities are all different the way they do schools, but in Chicago, it's very like, unless you have the money to move into a neighborhood with a great local school, you're kind of playing a lottery system and it would be possible that my kids could end up in different schools.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, oh my gosh, getting around is already a hassle. So that, how am I going to get the kids to schools in different areas? And then I was like, when am I going to work? And then I got pregnant with Clara and we just said, nope, like I'm out. I can't do this with five kids. And so we literally made our move to St. Joe based on two criteria. One was that I had friends and my sister-in-law Jenna worked for the school system here. I knew it was a great school district. So, and I knew it had like three elementary schools, one middle school and one high school. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. So like that simplified everything.
Yep.
And then there was the fact that my brother and Jenna live here and they had young kids too. And since then, every move we've made in this town, those two criteria have been the stabilizing factors.
Yep.
I've just made sure we stayed near the same elementary school and I just made sure we stayed within pretty easy distance of family. Mm-hmm. So that has eliminated so many options and I'm glad for that because otherwise there's lots of little towns around here we could have moved to. There's lots of like places just outside the city limits where we could have gone. But that would have messed up one of those two criteria.
Yeah.
And I felt like just having those two things as like my fail safes just made it made the last 12 years simple, even if it wasn't always easy.
Yeah.
And even if it limited my choices a lot, which isn't always easy for me, but sometimes I need to have my choices limited or I just spin. Mm-hmm. So what's funny is now those things are becoming less important. So Claire's out of elementary school. My kids are, you know, more and more of them are driving. Being really close to family isn't as important because everyone's more mobile. And, you know, I don't know. So who knows in the future how that will look. But I do think that it's possible that we missed out on some opportunities. Mm-hmm. We might have missed out on homes that have been more perfect if we'd brought in our search. We probably have paid a little more money than we needed to over the years. But so far, the simplicity has been worth the trade-off. And I think that as my kids get older and more outwardly focused, I'll be able to kind of like loosen the reins a little bit on that clampdown that I've had. But it's been really, really useful for the last 12 years.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. I also want to just bring back COVID for a second because...
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about that?
Because COVID has taught so many of... Well, you and I worked remotely online already. So there are... Some of us who work on the internet where it didn't change, but for a lot of businesses and business models and school systems and education systems and fill in the blank, everything, people learn very quickly what does work to do online or remotely or virtually, what doesn't. And I think that will probably be changing some people's priorities as it relates to where they live and how close they live to certain people. I know for me, living 2.5-3 hours from my parents for the first several years felt great because we could do long weekends. If the kids had some big school play, they could come down and stay the night. I will say it is one of the worst 2.5-3 hour drives you can imagine. It's just on the 405 the whole time. So I've done other 3 hour drives that feel lovely. This is not a particularly great one. And it's not one you can do at any time of day. Otherwise, it'll be 5 hours. But it felt fine. But in the in this new time that we're living in, it made me really think about, okay, what does that look like if we're 5 minutes? If every time my sister who lives out of state, if every time that she comes to visit, we're not trying to do this triangulated, like, now how do we all get into the same place? So yeah, I've been joking COVID made me do it, but I bring that up again because I think a lot of people's job and school situations, even if we're looking forward to hopefully going back to normal, we've learned to do things in a remote way. Brian's company, you know, the headquarters is in Denver right now. It's been in different places and they were leaning in hard on, you know, the, if you were on some kind of a leadership track, Denver was going to be the place to be. And I don't think it's, you know, as of this recording, I don't think that's the mentality anymore for a lot of companies because they realize that leaders and executives and managers can work from anywhere. So anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's relevant as people come into this next phase of whatever we're looking at, 2020, 2021, et cetera.
It's definitely forced a huge societal change that I agree, you know, whenever we get back to normal, it's not going to look the way it did before. Yeah. So there's opportunity there. And might make things possible that weren't.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the harder parts, the emotional parts of going from, you know, to actually making these moves. You tell people that's exciting, but then you have to say goodbye to people and that's hard. And the relationship part, you know, you maybe are gaining something and losing something else. Yeah. You know, when do you make it official? When, how do you say those goodbyes?
Yeah, this is hard for me. And it's funny because I'm not a super emotional or sentimental person usually, except we've talked about it, like it'll hit me later. It hits me later type of person. But I have done this 3 times significantly, moving Chicago, Arizona, Arizona to Orange County, and now Orange County to Santa Barbara. All 3 times, it came up pretty fast and it was surprising to a lot of people. So it wasn't the type of move where you say, oh, I think in the next couple of years, we'll make a move and you talk about it openly and your friends kind of know that it's your dream.
Right.
In all 3 times, it came up relatively quickly. It was relatively kind of secret for a little while just because of jobs and details and stuff like that. And then we like mic dropped it. And I don't know why. Maybe it's us or maybe just circumstance. It's been like that all 3 times. And I will just tell you, it is hard. It's hard for me to have the same kind of conversation over and over again. And I think that's just emotionally draining, even if it's mostly a positive conversation. I'm not going to lie. I copied and texted like some text into different text chains. And I changed it for each person. But it just felt like, I don't know, dropping big news on other people feels like emotionally draining for me. And then
Do the same. I mean, why type it the same thing a million times? Yeah.
Our school community, our little scrappy charter school I've talked about a million times is really tight knit. That was hard telling our school we were leaving. It felt like, I don't know, like we don't love you anymore. Yes, like a breakup. Yes. Our neighbor, it felt like a breakup telling my close neighbors. It felt like and then telling my kids was really, really, really hard. These are ages that, you know, I am just figuring out how to even parent tweens in general, let alone uproot them from their school and their friends. That's very different from the newly 6 and 4 and 1 and a half the last time I did this. I mean, the older two kind of got it, but they were little. So this felt different. It felt like 2 weeks or a week and a half of having the same hard conversation over and over again and not having it be any easier because I just had, it was new every time for the other person. So answering questions. And I think for me, there's a little bit of like, I don't know, you know how I like to over-explain things. If I feel like insecure about a decision, I'll explain it to death, right? I want you to know exactly that I've thought through everything, that I, you know, that I'm making a good decision, that blah, blah, blah. And so I think there's some of that, like a need to prove or a need to show that like other people that this is the right thing, which of course that's who cares, right? It's our decision. So yeah, I don't really have much to say except it's been hard and now it's pretty public. Well, it's public because I'm talking about it on the podcast.
But it is officially public now.
Yeah, I haven't said anything on social media. Not that I have to, but that feels like another thing you can do to, you know, get excited. And we've had more of the hard conversations than we have the conversations where people are excited that we're coming to town. There's fewer of those. We've said more goodbyes than hellos at this point. So yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess for myself, I mean, I haven't had to leave friends behind in 12 years and I don't look forward to that part of any move I make in the future. When I've done it in the past, I left my sister. She lived in Lansing. We moved to Chicago. And that was hard because we had, our kids had grown up together, our older kid or my yeah. older kids and her younger kids. And then, that was difficult. I had I had relationships there in a community that I was really engaged in, and that was hard. And I really haven't had to do that again because I wasn't in Chicago long enough to have yeah. really deep roots. And I'm at the point now where I've put down some real roots here. And the funny thing is I get annoyed by those roots. I actually like to be kind of anonymous. I really like being in a new place or in a newish place and experiencing it without people knowing who I am. It's yeah. like a weird, like,
no, I get that.
I like to fly under the radar kind of a thing. And then the longer I've been here, the more impossible that is. Like my, you know, Jenna jokes that she's lived here much longer than me, but I did the radio thing for a while. And I just I'm a person who talks to people
known.
When I'm out.
Yeah.
I am known. And it's like, I can't walk 5 feet without bumping into someone in this town that I know or have worked with or had some involvement with. So it's like imagine what it would be like to not have that anymore. It's become such a part of my life. It's kind of hard to imagine. And I think it'll hurt, which makes me wonder, like, will I hang on to this area longer than I mm-hmm. really need to because of that? I don't know. Will I keep some kind of presence here? Like maybe have a place that is like home base, maybe that, I don't know. Like there, it could look a lot of different ways. And with crosstown moves, which we've done a lot of, there's not the same social and relationship issues, but there can be a lot of emotion about leaving a house yeah. behind, especially when that house has kind of been the place, like the backdrop of a period of your life that you have a lot of nostalgia for. Moving around a divorce time is a lot. It was really emotional.
Yeah.
And yeah. And another thing I was thinking about is the fact that the move I did 2.5-ish years ago now was basically like, I guess it was like more like two and some change. That was when we moved from after divorce, moved into a teeny house. Mm-hmm. And so that was very much like, I am going to put my head down and do something I don't really want to do, but I'm going to do it because that's the thing that needs to happen right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain grudging satisfaction in a move like that. And it felt like we were all pulling together and just making things work.
Yeah.
But then that's a very different feeling from this year moving. We didn't have to move. We could have stayed in that house for years more, but we just had a better opportunity and it mm-hmm. was time. And so this is more aspirational. It's a big step up in a lot yeah. of ways. And so both moves are bittersweet. And Clara has said, like, you know, she misses the old house. She loved that house so much. And I'm just aww. Laughing because I'm like, the house was so teeny tiny. And like, there was no room for any of us to do anything. But for her, it had probably a security feeling to it
yeah.
that she really liked. So I think that no matter what the reasons behind the move or how far, there's always emotion
yep.
Wrapped up in it. And it's just sometimes more about the space and the memories in it than the people you're leaving behind.
Yeah.
And so we've gone through both and all of the above.
Yeah. 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 Oh, well, I guess it's time to wrap up this one. This was really fun. And
yeah.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And just a reminder, we love hearing from you by email. We're hello@themomhour.com. Hey, tell me if you live in the Santa Barbara area or if you have moved kids in late elementary school, middle school, older ages. I really would love to hear your experience. It's not without some anxiety on my part. Thanks for thanks for walking through this one with us. And we're excited to continue this next week.
Yeah. And we love when you email us. I would also love to know if anybody has any crazy aspirational moves you're thinking about or planning for the future. Also, don't forget to check out our sponsor, Groovy. They're a new alcohol-free beer and wine company, and they're offering 15% off your order when you use promo code Mom Hour at getgroovy.com. Again, that's Gruvi, getgroovy.com.
And don't forget, so next Tuesday, we will continue this discussion about moving and we'll get into some of the nitty gritty details of making it actually happen. So we'll be back with you then and we will talk to you soon.